Hello, this is Janet Gallant welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And as always, I have a special guest. But today, I have a special guest who's been here three times before because listening to Alan Klein is such a joy for me that I want to share it. Alan Klein is what he calls a jollytologist. Alan's profession is teaching people to laugh, teaching people who have suffered a variety of crises to laugh. And I think, Alan, the philosophy here is that you're not doing the tragedy any kind of dishonor by laughing. Mm-hmm. Why don't you say something about that?
Well, there's in any loss, there's both tears and there's laughter, and we push away the laughter.
But how do we know it's there? I think people don't. You don't feel it when you've suddenly suffered a loss. My goodness, you don't feel the laughter.
No, you don't. But there is funny stuff around us all the time, and then we don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Over and over. And, you know, I think on the other shows I talked about getting into this business because my wife died at the age of 34.
Thank you for reminding. Yes.
And we had a huge laugh that helped me to remember to lighten up. Now, it was very difficult to do that while she was in the terminal stage.
Mm-hmm.
But looking back, it helped me laugh all the time. And what happened was...
Did it help her laugh also?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, you're not, you know, and there was tears. There were lots of tears.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, Janet, there weren't tears. But a lot of times people find that little bit of laughter and push it away when someone's grieving or dying and go, how can you laugh at a time like
exactly.
this?
Exactly. You know? This is no laughing matter.
Exactly.
Right. And
exactly.
So this, the dying, is not a laughing matter. But some of the other things
right.
can...
Mm-hmm. And so what happened is she had a copy of Playgirl magazine with a male nude centerfold.
Yeah.
And she said, Alan, I really like this nude male this month. Really hunky man. Can you put this photo or the picture centerfold on the wall by the bed over here? And I said, Alan, it's a hospital. You can stay for that. You know. And she said, well, why don't you get a leaf from the plant over there and cover up that part?
And I did
that. You know.
Wait, so she was a remarkable woman.
She was incredible.
Yes.
Yeah, of course. And I did that, and the leaf started to shrivel up, you know. It was fine for the first day,
the leaf was shriveling up, but he was not.
He was not.
Right.
So by the third day, you know, you could see everything we were trying to reveal, conceal rather.
Mm-hmm.
And we just started to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, looking back, it wasn't a lot of laughter. It was 5 or 10 seconds.
Yes, of course.
But I realized it helped us. It broke through to the sadness we were having.
You read a lot about, you know, every once in a while there'll be a newspaper article or some news magazine kind of thing on how actually healing laughter is, physically healing.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, this. Since I've been here, I've discovered a new research. It was a book that came out early this year or late last year called The... Other Side of Sadness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually one of the researchers is in Berkeley. I don't know where the other is. But these two researchers over 2 years studied people and laughter right after their loved one died.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found, that people who found some humor were able to smile or laugh within the first couple of months of their loved one passing,
mm-hmm.
did much better over the 2 year period of grieving than the other people.
Oh, and you're calling grieving a 2 year period? How interesting.
No, well, the study was 2 years.
Oh, no. I see.
So that's all they did was to follow them for 2 years.
Well, I asked that only because my own experience has been that at the 2 year mark, something lifted.
Oh.
And I didn't know if that, and then I've talked to other people about it.
Interesting. Well, maybe that's why they chose 2 years. I don't know.
Well, that would be something worth knowing about.
But what I'm saying is we don't associate humor and laughter with someone who's grieving.
Right.
And here they're showing that if you can find that, maybe difficult, but if you can find it, you're going to do better over that 2 year period.
Yes, yes. I believe that. I believe that. There was a wonderful Mary Tyler Moore show episode.
With the clown?
Uh-huh. Yes.
You know, I got to find that again because I did a book signing yesterday, a book passage, and someone brought that up.
Yes.
And I couldn't remember exactly what it was, so I've got to go find it.
It was brilliant, and she was brilliant. They were at church at the service for someone very loved who had just died, and everybody was just, you know, I mean, not in the mood for, she started to giggle. And the more she tried to stop, the worse it was, and she finally just exploded into a fit of such laughter and felt so horrible that she did it.
Yeah.
Until the minister finally said he would have wanted that.
Yeah. And yeah, you see that?
Oh, everybody find that episode. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I was thinking this. Isn't the one with the clown who dies?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. And that also has a lot of humor.
That's right. That's right.
And on YouTube, I don't know the name of it. Somebody sent it to me last week. It looks like it's in the Philippines or Japan. Woman's husband died, and she gets up to talk about him. And she says, you know, everyone has said wonderful things about my husband. I'm not going to talk about his great things. You've already heard that. I'm going to talk about those simple things that happen every day, like his farting, if I can say it, and like his, and she's doing all these kind of, and people are like, they're shocked, you know, then they are just laughing so much. And she said, you know, folks, it's those little things in life with another person that it really, you know, you live with those, mm-hmm. and it's those things that make them so endearing
and,
to you.
Yes, and what a wonderful tribute. Nobody gets brought back in memory by the CV and where they went to school and what their jobs were. They get brought back by being human beings.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's such a wonderful memorial, and so from her heart. You know, she wasn't there to make the audience laugh. She was just talking about her personal experience.
But look what
experience.
She allowed them to do.
Oh, yeah.
That's
wonderful.
So that's what you do. You allow people to laugh, and you teach them how. Now, I want to encourage everybody listening to this, please scroll down or go find Alan Klein's other Love Letters Live presentations and the things he is able to laugh at and appreciate with humor, like getting thrown out of Yale. If you want to know why, you have to go listen to it. And so much in his life. And just before we started this, Alan was talking, we were talking about dinner parties. I happen to love dinner. He said, I love dinner parties. You want to know what my favorite one was? And I said, yes, tell it now.
Okay, and nothing to do with death and dying. Well, a little bit.
Okay.
You know, everything has a little connection.
Well, just that you see the world in...
Yeah,
such
I was invited in Chicago by a pretty kind of society upscale woman to come and speak to her group of cancer survivors. And she invited me for dinner that night. And she said, just take a cab. Here's the address. So I take the cab, and it's one of those high-rise buildings on the lake. And I get in the door, and there's a doorman there, and he says, give me your coat. It's like 13 degrees out, and it's winter. Yeah. Give me your coat. And I said, where are you going? Give me your coat. And I said, but I don't know the apartment. I didn't get the apartment. I don't know where I'm going. And he said, doesn't matter. Just give me your coat. Okay, so I gave him the coat. He said, get in the elevator. Got in the elevator. There was an elevator operator. He takes me to the top floor. The doors open, and I'm in this woman's full floor
apartment.
So the
apartment. Whole floor, yes.
The whole floor. I've never... You know, I don't hang out with those kind of people. I've never done that. And then we sit down to dinner. There was about 12 people. And there was Dear Abby at dinner.
Huh.
I forgot. That's not her name. You know, that's her writer's name. But she, I can't remember her name.
Abigail Van Buren? I don't know. Well, go ahead.
Yeah,
we all
anyhow,
know.
Yeah, who it is. Dear Abby.
Right.
And she
like Cher.
Delightful.
All she needs is Dear Abby.
Yeah, right. Exactly. She was delightful, and I told her, you know, I have a story about you in my Healing Power of Humor book. And I can't remember what the story is now, but I told her what it was, and she says, how did you know that story? I've never written that story in any of my columns.
Oh.
And I don't know where I found, you know, doing research, I don't know where I found it. And so she was just delightful. She was happy that I was in her book. Who expected this kind of dinner party? It was like a highlight of my life.
But you said that you weren't. This had nothing to do with death or dying. But you did say that this woman asked you to come speak because of cancer survivors.
Yeah, that's why I said, well, it does have a little to do with,
because not every crisis is death and dying.
Oh, yeah.
And talk about
every
that for a
minute. Every loss is death and dying.
Okay.
Right?
That's something.
You go... Kubler-Ross talked about the five stages. Mm-hmm. My new book, Learning to Laugh, has the five stages.
Well, I want to talk about that
of going
too,
from loss to laughter.
Yes.
But it's not just a loss of a loved one or a friend. It's you lose your wallet. you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, you go through anger, depression, you know, all those Kubler-Ross stages. Your son or daughter moves off to college.
Oh, yes.
It's a loss.
Right.
Right? You don't get the job you want. It's a loss.
Mm-hmm.
We go through so many losses every... We're stuck in traffic. It's a loss of time, you know, that we thought we'd have.
Or, sure.
There's losses all over the place. Yeah. And so we're dealing with it all the time. And, you know, years and years ago, my very first thing I got published was in Prevention Magazine. And the article was, "Did You Die Today?"
Oh, my goodness.
And it was all...
How intriguing.
It was all about how we die every day, and in some levels, that's preparation of how we're going to face our own death when that time comes.
Can you give an example?
You
or
know,
two?
God, I wrote this in the middle 80s, and you want me to give an example?
No, come up with a new example.
Well, just talked about.
Yes, so losing a job.
All those, denting the car, you know.
You probably wouldn't be doing a workshop with people whose cars have been dented, although why not?
Why not? People who've lost their job. People who have to...
Well, that's... Yes, people who lose their jobs.
Yes.
Or lose their homes in a fire.
Right, right.
I mean,
right.
That's more significant than denting
a
car.
And I have a friend in the Oakland Hills who totally lost her house. Yeah. Yeah. So then...
So how do you get back
to
laughter?
There's minor losses, there's major losses.
Right.
So I think before we even get to the laughter, there's some bigger things like... focus on the positive rather than the negative. So look at what you still have rather than what you lost.
Oh, see, I think that I have a friend whose house burned down, and after 3 years, she's finally back in it, and everything, pictures, and she had recently lost her husband, and she was left with no pictures and not one piece of sentimental jewelry, no photographs, no nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And she sounds quite cheerful. She's a remarkable woman anyway.
Well, you know, you can look at what you lost, or you can look at, okay, now I can get all new stuff. Now I can live where I want. Now I can design the house as
I
want
it. But you also must have to learn to let go. Because, okay, you hit
right on one of my processes.
Oh, good. Then you talk about that. Because when you realize you can have all new stuff, that doesn't make up for the wedding pictures you don't have.
Right.
Although you still have it in your head.
Yeah, you still have it. You never lose that.
Right.
You still have that person's spirit in your head. You could hear their laughter. You could hear them speaking. You can remember the good times you had together. This is what I'm saying. Why focus on what you don't have? Focus on what you still have.
So you must really have to work on learning that.
Well, it's so funny. You're touching on all my five L words.
Okay,
But let's just
let
that go.
Then you do it.
I'm not going to do it in order, but one of them is let go. And there's a wonderful Zen story, but also a Zen quote about, you said your friend lost the house. There's a Zen saying, now that my house is burnt down, I could see the moon better.
Oh.
I mean, it's kind of bittersweet in a way, you know? But,
sounds scary.
Yeah. And the letting go, this is also, again, from the Zen tradition. Two monks walking down the road, you may know this story. They come to a river, there's a woman standing there. One of the monks picks up the woman, takes her across the river, and puts her down. The monks go on their way, and about a mile down the road, one of the monks who did not pick up the woman turns to the other and said, "How come you picked up that woman? I put her down a mile ago.
Uh-huh.
How come you're still carrying her around with you?" And the monk who picked up the woman said, "I put the woman down a mile back. Are you still carrying her around with you?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, how often do we carry around stuff,
yes,
whether it's the loss of a person, whether it's the house, you know, we just carry it around.
Well, you know, I thought of that photograph business because I think most of us are very attached to photographs.
Mm-hmm.
The truth of the matter is, I shouldn't be saying this publicly, people sometimes send me photographs, snapshots of the buffet table they took at my house, or the gathered guests.
Yeah.
And I throw them right in the wastebasket.
Yeah. Oh, good for you. See, I think this is a gift. I just hate to throw it away, but
I do because I'm aware of the fact that I remember this evening very well. I remember how beautiful the table looked and the menu and every single treasured friend who was there.
Uh-huh.
And what do I need this picture for? Because when my memory goes, if it does, mm-hmm. I'm not going to remember it. And this picture I won't remember this.
Yeah.
So why is it taking up shelf space?
You know, you're so right about that because the learning to laugh when you feel like crying is dedicated to my cousin Bernie, so we can talk about that.
Oh, let's get to that, actually.
But
yes.
I was the one that had to go to New York City because my brother had some heart problems. He couldn't help me to clean out the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And there we found all these old, old photos. We don't know if they were family photos. We don't know who it was. There's no markings on the back. Mm-hmm. And like, what do? We don't know who these people are. And yet I'm sure they had some meaning in her life. But for us, unless, you know, we didn't know if it was our grandmother, so we had to throw them away.
Yeah. I mean, different from, by the way, a beautiful headshot where you can really see the soul of a person.
Mm-hmm,
I'm
mm-hmm.
talking about those kind of snapshot things.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But as far as real photographs, yes, I think that's so hard to, because people call that losing a memory.
Look, yeah.
But it's not.
Right. And do you know, I think when people say, if there was a fire, what would be the first thing you would grab out of your house?
People say photographs.
Photographs. And I probably would too. You know, I don't know.
I don't know what I don't know. Yeah.
What would I grab? I don't know. You know what I'm having trouble letting go of? You talk about letting go. I used to be a scenic designer.
I know. Oh, I want you all to listen to that Love Letters, too, with Alan. Okay, go ahead.
So I have this portfolio of my basically paintings, you know, sketches of the designs.
Yes.
I don't know what to do with them.
Grab those.
And?
You've got.
Save them for
you've
what?
Got a daughter. Do you have grandchildren?
No, she doesn't want to have any kids.
Okay,
so I have a daughter.
So she should have it, and you should probably put it in love letters, in a big manila envelope. Here's your love letter for today.
Yeah, yeah.
A big manila envelope or whatever would contain these things with a love note to your daughter that says, I don't know what to do with these, but this was my heart and soul's work for quite some time.
Right.
I want you to have them.
Okay, but now
if you decide to pass them on or trap, that's up to you. But I want to make
okay.
What?
Because I'm thinking, well, it's kind of putting like a burden on her to do something.
So you mentioned that in the letter that you have my permission to toss them.
Okay,
if you want, or maybe you'll just leave them in the house you move out of and let strangers find it and have the joy of knowing something historical about the world of Broadway.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when people find these things years later, I'm telling you, some PhD student's going to get a thesis.
Well, actually, now that we're talking, you've brought up a good idea, not only to my daughter, but there's a television museum in New York City.
Oh, there you go.
They might want some of the sketches for, like, Captain Kangaroo.
Oh, I want them. Actually, if you're thinking of throwing them away, mail them to me.
No, not yet. If the museum doesn't want them.
Could I be top on the list? That sounds like I'd love to see them, actually. Okay, yes, the museum.
Yeah, yeah. That's always a great place.
It's nice to keep those kind of things because they're historically important.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So letting go. This brings up is there's so much stuff in our life.
Right. Well, let's get to your cousin and learning to laugh.
Okay.
So Alan's newest book is Learning to Laugh When You Feel Like Crying, Embracing Life After Loss.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you like to give a website where people can order this or what?
Well, my website has all my books.
Let's say it out loud,
www. And then alanklein.com.
alanklein.com.
alanklein.com. Yes.
Perfect.
So all my books are there.
Okay. And they're wonderful. They're wonderful. So talk about this.
So this book came about because my cousin, I never had any sisters, I have a brother, and she was like a sister to me. I mean, we would hang out when we were growing up, and we would every Saturday go see a Broadway show, and she was just fun. She was just great. And 2 years ago, she passed away. And I kind of looked for a book on grieving. You know, I went through grieving with my wife, but every death brings up more grief sometimes. So I was looking for a book that would kind of guide me through the grief process. Even though I know about it, I wanted a kind of simple book that would hold my hand.
Mm-hmm.
I could find nothing. Grief books were like 200 to 300 pages. They told you all the stages you'd go through. Uh-huh. They told you all about the horrible things you might be feeling, you know.
And nowhere was there permission to laugh.
Yeah, exactly. And so I thought, you know, I really want a book that was inspiring, that people could open almost anywhere that were grieving, that would encourage them to start living life again. And so there wasn't any, so I wrote it.
Wonderful. And I just want to say, I wish this were television, because this book actually pretty much fits nicely right into the palm of your hand. It's a little smaller than a TV guide,
mm-hmm.
and it's just easy. You could just stick it in your pocket and take it on the airplane.
Yeah, yeah, easy,
on your way to visiting the family,
yeah.
And it's every page is so clear and not overpacked. And
has a great quote to get you started from somebody that I admire. And
why don't you say what that quote is? Would you like to?
Well, they're all every
page. Every page
starts with it. But back to my cousin Bernie.
Please.
So just give you an idea of her kind of spirit. I mean, she really had this incredible spirit. First of all, she grew up during World War II. Her father had left, so her mother was working the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And they were on welfare one time. So it was not a very, you know, what you'd say, joyous, happy, you know, family. And yet both her mother and Bernice had this incredible spirit, laughing all the time. And Bernice told me that she lives her life the way her mother taught her to, which was to make somebody happy every day.
Oh.
And Bernice, nice. You know, she was the first person
you mean
that
to consciously do it.
She worked mm-hmm. for the Foundling, you know, volunteered for the Foundling rather, not for work, but yes. Like her mother used to knit sweaters all the time, even though they had no money, she'd go buy wool. Someone in the building was having a baby, she'd knit sweaters. It was a holiday, she'd knit, make cookies and bring it to people. Little simple things to make people happy every day. So Bernice had that spirit, and she was one of the first people I knew that flew on a plane. And we lived in New York City. There was no Kennedy Airport. It was LaGuardia Airport.
Mm-hmm.
And you would go out, and there'd be a observation deck, and you would wave her off.
Mm-hmm.
She'd sit by the propeller plane window, and, you know, you'd wave her off. Very different era. Now you can't even get to the gig, right?
I know.
So one time I asked her, I was a youngster, and I asked her, I was 9 years younger, and I asked her, Bernice, aren't you afraid of the plane crashing?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, no, I'm not. But if it did, I want it to crash after I'm coming home from my vacation, not when I'm going to my vacation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of spirit she had. So I dedicated the book to her. And then I opened it with a diary that I kept when she was dying. She died suddenly of leukemia, like within 2 weeks. And my daughter and I, you know, I went, arranged the funeral, went to the funeral. My daughter and I cleaned the apartment a little, and then went out. We had to get away, you know, so we wanted something that would lift us up. So we go to this museum, not knowing, to get some tranquil, you know, time surrounded by beauty and stuff. Go to this museum not knowing that this was their fundraising day.
Mm-hmm.
And within an hour, we're there. Hundreds of people are coming. The music is playing, you know. All of a sudden, this tranquil place we wanted suddenly changed. And this is like 24 hours from the time that it was Bernice's funeral.
So it went from her death and funeral into a
kind of a
parade.
Party atmosphere that we didn't expect, you know. And we hung out there for a little bit, and then it was like getting too much for us. So we went to one of her favorite restaurants, thinking, okay, we're going to have a nice quiet dinner here. No sooner than we come in and sit down and enjoy our dinner, there's a guy comes in with his guitar and sits next to us. He was like the entertainment for the evening. He's asking us to sing along with him. And all of a sudden, again, this tranquil dinner turned into like this entertainment thing, you know?
Joy.
Joy turned into joy. And we kind of turned to each other and realized this is Bernice talking to us.
Yes, I was gonna guess at that.
Saying that, you know, you've mourned enough, you've cried enough, I've left you with my joyous spirit. Here are some examples. Let it rub off.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how that book kind of came out of that. Yeah, that experience.
Wonderful.
So I divided it into 5 stages. One is loss, realizing that loss is part of life, that all of us are going to die, you know?
Right.
Both of us in this room are going to die.
Right.
Hopefully not right now, but
I need to get this up on my website first.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, exactly. We never know.
Right.
So acknowledging the loss, and that loss is part of life, you know, and that you look at this beautiful tree, and in the fall, the leaves fall, right? And then they nourish the ground so that the tree in the spring has more energy to come up and produce more leaves. And I think people are just like that. You know,
yeah. My father used to say about death when I was a little girl, I remember this, he used to say, you know, the old leaves have to make way for the new leaves, or it would be a very terrible, terrible place on earth.
Well, when I do a program on this, I ask people, what if we never died?
Oh.
What would this world be like? It's like nature's natural way of cleaning up, making room for the new. I think it makes perfect sense. And yet, it's hard. It's still...
Yes. It's not a great plan for the living.
No.
When your old leaf goes.
No. But it makes sense.
Right.
In the big picture. If you look at the big picture, it makes sense. So loss is the first thing. Learning, I think death is some of our greatest teachers. We can learn. So it's a gift, actually, because we learn to enjoy life more. Mm-hmm. We learn to every day's precious.
Oh, where it wouldn't be if you lived forever.
Exactly. Or would you get anything done? No, you'd go, oh, I have 100 years to do this. Why would I do this? Why would I write the book? You know, I have lots of time.
Well, you wouldn't write the book because there would be no loss.
Yeah, I
right.
Well, that. Yeah, I didn't think that far, but you, you're right. So it's losing, learning, and then letting go, which we've already talked about, and then it's just starting to live again. You know, when I was a hospice volunteer, I worked with people that were grieving, and I would notice people would grieve, like, you know, a very long time sometimes, and others would get over it a little quicker. But those that grieve for a really long time, I realized there were two lives lost. The person that passed,
yes.
And the person who's still living is not really living their life.
Yes.
And so at some point, we need to realize we've got to start living. And then, of course, finally, living fully, you get to the laughter. That there is humor all around.
Yes.
You know, even at funerals, and we don't want to laugh at a funeral, and we start giggling, and then that grows and grows. It's just all around us.
Yeah, there's a very beautiful poem that somebody read at her mother's funeral, and I didn't say, could you just please give me that? And later, I tried to find it, and I couldn't. And I'm going to put the word out there. It was really gorgeous. It was, and this mother had left it on her bedside table for her daughter to find. Mm. And the gist of it was, don't think about me too often. And the point of it was, don't be grieving over me for a long time, because your grieving will keep my soul imprisoned here.
Mm.
And
I've got things to do. I may.
Okay, would you look?
I may have it. I'll look.
It was so heart-ripping.
Yeah. But, you know, there is humor even in the loss period. I remember when my dad died about 8 years ago. I flew to Florida. I'm from California. Flew to Florida. My brother flew from Connecticut to be with her. And when I got there, my mom was on the phone with the rabbi and telling the rabbi how my brother's going to go back to Connecticut to sit shiver. Mm-hmm. In the Jewish religion, you sit shiver for a week, which is people come and pay their respects. And I was going to stay with her in Florida to sit shiver.
Mm-hmm.
But she got tongue-tied. And she said, I was going to stay in Florida to, can I say it? Shit shiver. And we laughed so much.
There are moments, yeah.
She had a hang-up from the rabbi because we were laughing so much.
Yes.
And I told that story to Rabbi Earl Grohman, who wrote the foreword to Learning to Laugh When You Feel Like Crying. And he said, Alan, you have ruined my profession. He said, every time I have to talk to a family about sitting, shiver, he said,
tongue
I just
get
stop
tied.
And I have to think.
Good. So that's a gift you gave him. He has to stop and he has to think before he speaks. We should all be doing that.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, everything's a gift with you. Thank you so much. I could just listen to you forever.
We're not over.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
But let's talk again soon on whatever your next topic is.
Okay.
Because everything that you say,
I'm writing my
for
next
me
book.
Is such a lesson.
Don't you want to know the title?
Yeah, I'm going to ask you. Not sitting shiva.
You can't ruin my life.
Oh, good.
That's it.
Wonderful.
So I'm working on that. Oh,
thank you, dear. Well, I hate to have to say goodbye, but I do have to. It's Janet Gallen saying goodbye for now. And please remember that if you think you have to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, every love letter is a special occasion. And there is no end in sight of who you can send things to and what makes a love letter. I mean, sending your set designs is such a love letter. It's such a generous thing to do.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you do. Stamp it and put it in an envelope in some compassionate and loving way and send it off. Talk to you later. Bye.